Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back. Welcome to this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. We have so much music that we can never get to on the regular show, so that's why we created this bonus podcast, to indulge our music fetish even more.
We could probably do it every day, but I think we'd drive Alex, Andrew, and Sol crazy.
Absolutely, and we do love our listeners. If you want to support Sound Opinions in a big way, you can get these bonus podcasts early on Patreon. Just like Jeffrey Crean, one of our most loyal listeners. Thanks for your support, Jeffrey. And Jim, this week you've got an interview for us, right? Who did you talk to?
I talked to the incredible artist Steve Keen. Greg, generally speaking, we've avoided talking to album cover artists because, it's an audio show, right? I mean, the only exception we made was years ago, decades ago now, when we talked to the guys from Hypnosis,
you know,
the Pink Floyd guys. But I think Steve Keen has been such a presence on the indie rock underground, as well as a fine artist, that we just had to talk about the Steve Keen art book, the first beautifully printed collection of his work. Plus, it was put out by Hatton Beard Press, our old friend from Chicago, J.C. Gable.
Right.
And you know how hard it is to say no to J.C. So I said, okay, I'll talk to Steve. And Steve just had wonderful stories, and he's an inspiring story. He does his work. He buys 100 sheets of 4x8 plywood at a time and chops them up, and those are his canvases. He estimated that as of last year, he has sold or given away, and he gives away as many paintings as he sells, 300,000 paintings, as well as artwork that's appeared on the cover of Pavement Records, Silver Jews, The Elephant Six Bands, right? We had just done the Elephant Six interview. His stuff is just amazing. You know, he's shown in England, Germany, and Australia. He's on display at several of the great chefs, David Chang's restaurants, right? Mm-hmm. And if he strikes you as an interesting person and you see him, he'll give you one. I just love that spirit.
Your enthusiasm is infectious, Jim. I cannot wait to hear this interview. We're going to be back with that in a minute on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. Every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
All good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know when you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. I'm honored to talk to Steve Keen because you have been such a part of music history over the last couple of decades, and this new book, the Steve Keen Art Book, is a great accomplishment. So welcome, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
You know, you've been such a part of our lives, and I don't think visually. I'm an audio person, right? That I don't even think I realized all of your contributions. I knew the artwork. I didn't put it with your name until really digging deep into this book that collects the work you've done for album covers and other work. I think it's a great story. How did you started like all of us did as a college radio DJ, indulging your passions, right, in Charlottesville, Virginia?
Yeah, my wife and I were on the radio station for about 4 years, about 30 years ago. And I've always been an artist. I went to art school. I did everything, you know, like you're supposed to do. The first time I became really excited about what I should do with my art happened when we were on the radio station, just seeing the thousands of albums. I don't know if you go to a radio station now, if there's any albums or anything.
No, it used to be. And they used to all have stickers, right, Steve? Where all the DJs in between playing songs would write their thoughts about the album.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sometimes you'd write bad things about it, yeah. And people would rip off the sticker.
Yeah.
So that world of being in a basement around tens of thousands of albums, you know, from the late 50s till, you know, the Nirvana record came out, you were like on another planet. You were surrounded by hundreds of thousands of other people's dreams.
Yeah.
Most were forgotten. Some remained. And I wanted to kind of make my art kind of almost like a tribute to seeing that stuff in the basement. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for about 30 years.
Yeah, and you capture that spirit of independence and that spirit of discovery of coloring outside the lines. A very unique style. How did that develop? Now, you said, you know, did all the things I was supposed to do, went to art school. You got an MFA from Yale.
Yeah, you know. I was there at the right time, you know.
I gotcha. Always beware the people who brag about those credentials, but you're prouder of the fact that you have sold or given away 300,000 pieces of art.
Yeah, I didn't plan on having this, you know, to be the way I work, but I would paint these pictures and I would go to a bar where my friends would be playing. I'd bring 100 pictures. I'd charge like $2 for $5. So I wouldn't, you know, hopefully people would buy them so I wouldn't have to bring them home.
Yeah.
Then I got enough money to buy paint and food for the next day. And it just kind of stuck because lots of different kinds of people appreciated what I was doing, from, you know, skateboard kids to art history teachers. And it made me believe, you know, to this day, that there's so many more ways of thinking about something as, you know, regular as a painting. Like, you know, people buy a painting and they hang it in their living room or their guest bedroom or something like that. And I wanted my work to feel like anybody could own it, but it was still good art. And I wanted it to be like fun, the way to buy it. So if you make it cheap, people think, well, I better buy it now. I might lose money if I don't buy it. And, you know, I created these situations, these events where there'd be a few hundred people coming at once to buy it. And it was a fun situation, like, you know, like a happening, like an event.
I love this idea of democratizing the often all too snooty art world. You know, I mean, we read about, you know, Art Basel and these things, you know what I mean? And you're doing it the way the punk band is. I got some canvases in the back of the van. I got some t-shirts.
Yeah. I mean, that's what inspired me. You know, the art world, I've got nothing against the art world. There's many times that I'm included in art world events, and that's great. But I kind of walk on the other side where it's sort of like, you know, the guys in the band drive for 7 hours and they do a show for 7 people and they, you know, they're lucky if they sell 7 CDs they're satisfied. And I thought that was the greatest.
Yeah. Tell us, so you became friends with David Berman. Does that lead to your first album cover? What was your first?
Yeah, I did a EP for him, the Silver Jews, in 93. Yeah, David was also on the radio station in Charlottesville. And we worked at the same restaurants together. We were like half the people on Pavement seemed like they washed dishes at this restaurant. And, you know, those were really fun times. And we all kind of moved to New York around the same time. So, yeah, I knew those guys back then.
And then you do Pavement covers. What was the reception like? Did you get much feedback? I mean, everybody's talking about the music, but what did you hear as an artist?
I don't know. That's a good question. I try to keep my head down because you're just so lucky to be invited to be, you know, part of their world that you don't want to jinx it. So you just kind of, you know, you're just part of the scene and you're supportive and you just kind of don't overthink it.
Right, right. Or as we would say in Jersey in those days, you don't think who you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's on the cover. Maybe their record's going to sell a couple thousand. Right? You know, it's fascinating to me because Silver Jews and Pavement have this sort of shambolic, there's a great rock critic word, feel to their music. And so does your art. And then you link up with the Elephant Six bands. All right. And it also highlights, you know, they have they had, and I covered those bands from the beginning, a sort of childlike wonder at the joys. I mean, they start as DJs too, right? You know, Ruston, Louisiana, everybody goes home from the technical school. They're playing Hawkwind and Kraftwerk all night and Pink Floyd. And this,
that's
this,
what I did.
Yeah, right. You know, this sense of discovery, childlike wonder that is part of the psychedelic experience. I'm going to be like the five-year-old who is discovering finger paint for the first time, right? And you capture that, and it's so perfectly, after so perfectly meshing your style with Silver Jews and Pavement, it perfectly meshes with Elephant Six.
I've always felt that I wanted my art to be useful, to be utilitarian, to be something simple and complex. It's complex if you can use it, and it's simple if you don't need it. But I think it was, I didn't want to be so specific with my work. I wanted to keep it open-ended and almost make them feel like they were trading cards, like people could like use them and make their own thing out of them. They weren't already something finished and final and presented in a certain way. They were just something that people could find in a record store or in a car or at somebody's house. And then they could take them and then they decided that they could do something different with them, you know, take 10 of the images and put them together to make a, you know, a product wrapper or something like that. I wanted it to be useful.
How did you meet the Elephant Six people?
Robert called me up and he said he saw my art at a friend's house.
Robert Schneider, Apples and Stereo.
Yeah.
The master producer, the Brian Eno of that crew.
Yeah, really, it's wild. It's, you know, it's back in the, you know, when we're living these things, you know, these people are special, but then it's like people are still talking about these people, you know, 25, 30 years, and it's moving. I was part of those times.
Yeah. Well, and it's wonderful to see you did the cover art for Adam Clare's book. We recently did a long chat with him about the Elephant Six mysteries, as he calls
them. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then that leads to meeting the others, yeah?
They were inseparable then. If you meet one, you meet them all.
And it was hard. You know, they're recording constantly, just like you are painting constantly. And what winds up on whose record remains to be seen. There's no hang-ups about it. You know, I teach review in the arts at Columbia College in Chicago. And you know, when we talk about fine art as opposed to movies and video games and music, you know, there's always that element of commerce. And there's that wonderful 60 Minutes clip that they did about the absurdity of pricing in the art world years ago now. And, you know, Mike Wallace stands in front of a Basquiat with a bunch of young black school children from the Bronx, right? You know, and he says to them, you know, what do you think of that? And they all say, I can do better, right? Which Wallace uses to posit Basquiat as a poser, right? But to me, I think it is the most beautiful punk rock moment, you know, to say to this young child, you know, the art says to this young child, I can do that. Well, that's what we've always done in punk rock, right? Patti Smith, this is the era where everybody creates.
Sure. It's like you see it and it becomes a gateway. It's like, you know, I think when they said, I can do that, I think it does imply that I feel included to participate, that maybe I could make that also, you know, not just like I could do like anybody, not like anybody could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's fascinating when we look at your career. You are shown in museums. You have been part of exhibits around the world. And every once in a while, I see profiles of up-and-coming or veteran indie artists, you know, putting out a new album, and they're sitting in their living room, and the guitar's there, the cat's there, there's the Steve Keen painting on the back wall. You know, high and low, always.
Now, my audience for, like, about the first 10 years doing this was really, you know, friends of mine who were in bands, and they bought them and they passed them out to other people, or I gave them buckets of the paintings to give them to friends. And now it's like the people that know about me and they buy my work. But it started off being, you know, like another band kind of, something from the merch table, like just like a shirt that you don't wash.
Yeah. Or and that you wind up wearing until it literally falls apart. Yeah.
You don't have to wash.
Your paintings don't self-destruct, though. That's good.
No. It's pretty sturdy.
How did the book come about? I know Daniel Ephraim was key.
Yeah, it's it started off at, he got me a show with Shepherd Fairey in Los Angeles 6 years ago, and I did a ton of paintings for the show, and Dan started photographing, you know, I think he photographed everything that I brought for the show, like at least 500 pictures. And, you know, he just sort of sat on them for a couple of years. And then he had this idea, you know, maybe I can really do something, you know, this is like, might turn out to be a story. And it is the only thing that I can kind of, it's not bragging, but it is a wild existence, because I don't think people really know how many paintings I've ever made. I mean, to know what it means to make, you know, 300,000 paintings.
Yeah.
You know, maybe like 1,000th of the paintings are in the book, because, you know, I crank out a couple hundred a week, and then I wrap them up for UPS, and they go out to everybody around the country. And so I hardly get to see what I do, and I don't really photograph them as much as I should. Mm. And, you know, it's sort of like him putting together all this information. It's like, wow, this is kind of wild how I've been doing this for so long, and how they've been dispersed all over the country and in Europe and Australia. And, you know, it's kind of, it's a little bittersweet, because I'm not dead yet. You know, I'm just getting started. You know, but it's very nostalgic looking back at the book. You know?
Yeah. No, there's always that damage. I wrote a book about a friend of mine who did miniatures, and you know, we wanted to do a catalog raisonné, right? You know, and he's like, Eddie, that I'm not dead yet. I'm gonna keep going, right? But you're sitting in I guess your workshop, right? You know, famously there was a piece I guess in Time, right? 100 sheets of 4x8 plywood and at least 5 gallons of paint a week. You said you use, and there indeed is the 4-foot stack of 4x8 plywood.
We live with it. We live with my art.
It's a much
different way than other people do.
I'm not surprised you want to get it out the door in UPS, right? Because there's only room for so much.
Yeah.
How do you think your style's changed over the years?
I try not to have it change, it's for doing this for 30 years, you know, change isn't, you know, you do change, but there's certain time periods where I really love what I do. And then I think, oh, the other stuff is not as good as those years. And then 2 years later, it's like, hey, those years were really good. Better than, but I don't try to change. I try to keep it consistent. Whenever I try to have like fancy ideas, then I run into trouble. Hmm. I just try to remain like true to my original craft doing it and my original intent.
Yeah. And it doesn't get old, Steve?
No, because for me, the newness of it are the new events that I get to show them at, the new sort of way I get to install the work, things like that. It's always different. The work is sort of like the work is the work, but that's just part of it to me. Creating an event is what's fun.
Like, yeah, just last like month you started out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it always breaks my heart when I talk to artists in all sorts of different mediums, you know, when they just say, oh, it's not the same for me anymore. I've lost the spark. And I'm like, wow, but if I could do what you do, I would enjoy every minute of it.
Yeah, they're just going through a rough patch because they're going to.
Everybody has one.
Yeah.
All right, what's the last album cover you did?
Oh, gosh.
Maybe we haven't even seen it yet.
Yeah, I haven't done anything lately. A lot of people ask me to do album covers, and it's not something that I kind of do unless I'm friends with the people. Mm. Unless there's like, I don't know, unless there's a, I don't know. I don't really do it unless people, they're friends of mine, or it's like I'm really in love with the music.
Okay. All right. So you've loved all the, I mean, you did do a Dave Matthews poster.
I've done a lot of Dave Matthews posters, and Dave Matthews is like the king of Virginia. He's an amazing, amazing story, what that was all about.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I was there when it just came from nothing to conquered America. It's incredible.
Well, I've always said that the Dave Matthews ethos, the way they've approached the business, coloring outside the lines, right? Not being part of that, Live Nation, Ticketmaster, major label. I mean, they've always done things their own way. It's very laudable. But I'd rather drink acid than listen to a Matthews record.
Oh.
It's a show about rock criticism, Steve. I'm sorry.
It's true. It's true. Life's complicated. But the whole phenomenon was fascinating.
Yes.
It was part of our life. It's like, I used to work in a restaurant with Dave Matthews' sister, Jane Matthews, and my wife, like, worked in the restaurant with Dave Matthews, was a bartender, and, it was, and two other guys in the band. It was just like, it was such an insane time. Yeah. So I think of those times.
I gotcha. Thank you, Steve Keenan. And this is a wonderful book. Thank you to Daniel Ephraim for making it possible, and the fine folks at Hat and Beard, and everybody's putting it. It's a real keeper. It's a work of art itself.
Thank you.
And that is it for this bonus episode. To support Sound Opinions, become a member on Patreon and connect with other listeners in our Facebook group. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our social media consultants, Katie Cott. Thanks for listening.